The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Welcome to it. Great to be with you. Weekend edition, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mr. Mark Kranak, Colton Stone, 80s action star. Gorgeous morning. Holiday weekend to remember those. And we are excited to be a part of you. You can tap the line. Schilling Bridge, Cork and Tap House lets you do that. Numbers to get in, 466-3776. 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Find us on Twitter at Hail Varsity, at Schmidt underscore radio, at Mark Skurs, at Two Birds, One Stone. If you want to harass Colton this morning, you can email us Chris or Mark at HailVarsity.com. On the docket today, we'll run down Brandon Vogel. We are getting ever so close to the Hail Varsity, your college football Bible, the yearbook coming out in June. Gary Sharp will be with us. So many news and notes from the week that's been on Nebraska football. James Palmer Jr. is going to be back hooping at PBA. That's good stuff. Some scheduling things to get into. And in about 20 minutes or so, the rewind will feature our favorite pirate, Mike Leach, caught up with the coach this week. We hit on some of his travels because, you know, it is vacation season. And he'll get into a ghost story at the Roosevelt Hotel in Los Angeles. And, fifth grade graduation. Kranak, what's good, man? How are you?
You know, I'm fantastic, brother. I'm trying to figure out what kind of grill to purchase.
You did text me that. Mm-hmm. Yes. I can help you. And you're welcome to sample some of my... Well, let's just say the grill's dominance this weekend. We'll be firing up the smoker. We'll be putting something on the grill. You and the fam are ready to are always welcome down.
I appreciate that, man. Well, never mind then. I'm actually not going to get a grill now. Thanks.
Are you struggling with it?
Containers?
We do. We can get some.
Could you grill for the whole week for me?
I would do that. Absolutely,
be appreciative.
Oh, no, I love it. We sat out last night and watched LeBron do his thing. We didn't have anything on the grill because I got off work a little bit late. But, no, it's, anything you want, man. Mikasa, sukasa.
Look, I've not been in the grill market for a while.
How many years? How many years has Old Faithful put in for you, your current grill?
So I get a Weber charcoal round. That's what I got.
Okay.
Like classic charcoal Weber.
Okay.
I've had it for, God, well over a decade.
Right. Those are the best.
But it's, they're nostalgic. Right?
You've been together 10 years.
There's something primitive about them that's cool, right? You know, you're sort of like, hot dead animal on fire. Like that's what you're dealing with there. But it's time to step up, man. And there's a whole, my God, it is so hard to sort through all the features and the things. But is it one of those deals where if you go pellet grill, you kind of can't go wrong?
Well, let me say this, man, and I may get beat up for saying this, but listen, the pellet option, like your Traeger or your Green Mountain or your Pit Boss. I have a Pit Boss, and what I did with the Pit Boss is it was more bang for your buck. You know how thrifty and investigative I am with my dollars.
Put it nicely.
You know, I'm a cheap bastard is what it is.
Yeah, there you go. A little closer.
Yeah, it's on the mark. The pellet option can grill your pork chops, can take care of your chicken, can do your steak, okay? It's not that it's bad, but what that thing's meant to do is to put beer butt on or your ribs or your wings. We're doing brisket on Sunday. That'll be a fumble at the goal line, but I'm going to try it anyway. and you're putting that thing at 200, 250, and you're smoking for several hours, okay? You can grill with it, but its job is to smoke low and slow and just blast you with some awesome flavor. If you want to grill and sear, you want to do bone-in pork chop. You want to do a New York strip. You want chicken breast that mama loves.
Yeah.
Get a grill. Invest in both is what I'm saying. Have that option.
Oh, do both.
Do both. Get yourself a grill you're going to be happy with. And then also.
And a pellet grill?
Yes, that's what we have. Get both.
No. Really?
Yes.
I thought the whole promise of this thing was that it would take care of everything.
It will. But I'm saying, if here's what I'm going to tell you to do, okay? Get yourself, I have a Charbroil infrared. That thing gets up to almost 900 degrees, okay? I've had that thing for a while. It was a Father's Day gift given to me. I got the payoff. That's another story. But what I can, I can cook like steak, chicken, pork chops, sear those bastards. Sorry, I'm swearing.
That's fine.
Sear those things. I have it down. I don't even need a meat thermometer. I can tell by looking, by how many beers are done, and it's good for everybody. That's the comfort level. That's the taste. That's the heat. That's the locking in of juices. It's wonderful. You can put brats on. I mean, it's just, it's hassle-free. With the smoker, the little longer projects for your road football Saturdays when Nebraska kicks off at 6, you and I get done, you put a rack of ribs on or some wings, you let them smoke, you catch the 2:30 kickoff, and by 5:30 you're ready for your ribs. Do both. Grill. When you want to do just chicken or steak or pork chops, get a smoker that, yes, technically you can grill on, and it would work.
That's disappointing to me.
Why?
That's disappointing.
Why? Have two options, man. It's like having two quarterback choices.
I thought that's what the whole thing was with those ceramic grills and pellet grills in the first place.
It is, but most folks who get the smoker smoke on it just because it can grill. Some folks I know will have an option to grill on a different grill.
Wow. What kind of deck and patio do these people have?
Oh, I'll send you a picture of the patio.
Yeah, okay.
It's wonderful. So, get both is what I'm telling you.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, that's not in the play.
Here's what you can
do. I need one thing that can do it all.
Okay.
That's what I need.
Well, if you're just going to do one, get yourself that pellet thing option. Go with the Traeger or a Pit Boss or a Green Mountain. There's other suggestions there. Email your suggestions to Kranak, mark@hailvarsity.com or at Mark Skurs. So what you can do to complete this double threat is put some money down on Nebraska. Conference futures are out by Vegas. Odds to win the Big Ten Conference, you got to drop $100 to win $150 for Ohio State. Wisconsin is plus 400. Penn State's plus 450. Michigan's plus 600. The Michigan State is plus 1,000. And Northwestern's plus 1,600. Purdue plus 2,000. Nebraska is third to last. Plus 3,300 plus 3,300 to win the Big Ten. Just above Minnesota, just above Illinois, behind Iowa, Indiana, and Maryland. How does that grab you?
Now let's describe this futures thing. So 3,300. So you would have to put in $3,300, or you'd have to put in $100 to win 3,300
at this
point. If Nebraska was to win the conference.
Yes.
And Nebraska's in bed with Rutgers, Maryland, Indiana, and Iowa.
That's kind of
the same future.
That is their zip code right now.
Just ahead of Minnesota and Illinois.
And if you're Minnesota right now, you're probably going, what?
Yeah, right.
And if you're Illinois, you just, I don't know what to tell you, man. Sorry, it's going to be another pinata season for you. But how about Wisconsin? And it makes sense because of what they got back. I know they lost a lot, too, defensively. But there's a real groundswell that Wisconsin takes the crown this year.
There's a guy, there's a video going around of one of their defensive, like their nose guards, that's right. 320 pounds doing a backflip on the beach.
Right.
So, yeah, crown him. I mean, come on. What, are you going to block that guy?
When's the last time you saw anyone from Wisconsin playing football on a beach?
Been a while.
Right.
I'm racking my brain now, and I'm trying to think.
Well, we'll see former Wisconsin star J.J. Watt on the beach at some point this summer.
Oh, yeah.
In some jogger pants.
Is that what's going
to
happen?
Yeah, because, you know, he can wear them to work out. He can wear them to be in the front row for game six.
Why not?
With the futures there, that's just some friendly information for you. From a scheduling standpoint, news out yesterday by Minnesota. I think the Journal Star had this morning on Black Friday. That deal with Minnesota, likely to get done, but not done. Bill Moose, earlier this week with the network, he had his sit down on Monday, covered a ton of things, got into schedule, got into Black Friday. They got things kind of shored up, so Iowa, Nebraska will be a reality moving forward, and they're about ready to knock out Minnesota and Nebraska for Black Friday. That's good. There was also some hinting at getting involved with Big 8 / Big 12 schools for future opportunities. I don't know if that's basketball or football, but we can spend a couple of minutes on that. Listen, I think Nebraska football will be back up to speed. And when I mean up to speed, we're talking that 8-9 win number that was made to look real easy for a number of years by Coach Osborne. You're looking at 2 to 3 years where Nebraska gets kind of its rightful place back. That's the feel. That's the hope. And, you know, year one, we'll see
fair.
How. Well, yeah,
okay.
Very, very fair. We'll see how things shake out. But
yeah.
As part of moving forward, and you and I have gone over who's on the schedule when it comes to Colorado and Oklahoma, and you have Tennessee and Arizona. I mean, you've got some good teams, and you've played some good teams. I mean, you've gone through the SCs and the UCLAs and the Virginia Techs of the world. The Miamis came to town. You did the home and homes with them, Washington. I mean, so you've had a pretty good run of that third Saturday in the fall being your build up. All right, here's your statement
Oregon.
To the nation. Oregon, thank you, yes. And how do you handle it? How does it prepare you for the rest of the conference? I don't know what can get done about getting teams beyond what's already here. Do you want to have that option and opportunity to, hey, let's test ourselves if you're a Nebraska fan against a Clemson or an Auburn or an Alabama or an LSU or an SC again? Or Florida State. I mean, just go down some big name teams. Would you rather have that option and opportunity than, oh, sweet, instead of being cold and driving to Ames, we can get Iowa State on the schedule. And Campbell's a good coach. I just don't know how long he'll be there. Iowa State or Kansas State or Kansas. Does the Big 8, Big 12, aside from Oklahoma or Texas, do much for you? I mean, those were all fun things. Missouri in Arrowhead would be cool, but that's about it. A&M would be cool, but the rest of the Big 8, and I'm talking Oklahoma State, Kansas, Iowa State.
I'd like Oklahoma State because I think you put them up there with
right?
the other kind of groups that you've other teams that you rattled off.
They're probably
top 20.
Yeah, they're a tier below some of those teams I nailed, but. They're right there, absolutely.
Performance-wise, they're not. Not in the last 10 years.
They've been 8, 9, 10, 11 wins. Absolutely, they've been really good.
Regularly.
Yeah, they'd be fun.
Good offense, high-powered.
Right. I mean,
always.
It'd wear your defense out early in the year.
Mm-hmm. That'd be a fun game because that game would be in the 40s. But the rest of it, no, I don't. Look, if Kansas State ends up on the schedule, fine.
But doesn't it, doesn't they have to end up on the schedule before Snyder leaves? I mean, do you care about Kansas State after he's gone? I don't either.
No. Or Kansas. I mean, come on. They don't even care about themselves.
No, they
so
don't.
Why would we care about scheduling? You know, why would you care about scheduling a team that doesn't even respect itself? Right? I mean, come on. We don't.
The only reason is because of the Rolling Hills down in Lawrence. And it was fun to invade, wasn't it? I mean, you remember your first Kansas game. Hey, it's my neighbor. Hey, we could have just walked across the street. Instead, we drove 2.5 hours south to see each other and freeze a little bit.
But you can't go from the USC caliber to Kansas because they're close. I don't care if they're close. They're terrible. They don't even like themselves. They don't even, you know what I mean? Like, this, no. Iowa State, I mean, you know, whatever. I could see those teams replacing, say, a Troy.
That yes, but you don't want that as your non-conference ramp up game. You don't want
that would
it
not at, be marquee.
No.
No.
Nor would you really get credit for it.
No, absolutely not.
Unless they, you know, beat TCU and Oklahoma in consecutive weeks.
Yeah, you know, and it's something I think you sort of take for granted around here in these parts. Is that Nebraska generally schedules a huge out-of-conference opponent. Now, that opponent is not always fantastic because you're cutting these contracts, you know, decades in advance or whatever.
You're hoping they're still good when you sign them.
But that's sort of a tradition that I don't think we talk about a lot. That not every school, like, for instance, Iowa does not do that. You know what I mean? They Iowa, Iowa State, fill in the blank 1AA team.
Maybe they'll get a Pitt on the schedule, right?
Right, but they don't do Dakota that. They don't have that marquee non-conference opponent.
It's been a while.
They just don't do it. A lot of schools don't. I can't think of Michigan State doing that with regularity. Could be wrong here. But I'm just trying to think of in the off season how many times do you see, you know, Michigan State's always been Oregon.
Notre Dame.
Yeah, they had that series with Oregon. I guess you're right. They always have Notre Dame. That's true. Well, and a lot of those schools that are on Notre Dame's kind of regular calendar, that's sort of a built-in one for them, right?
Right.
A built-in
half the Big Ten, half the ACC. Yep.
But I like the fact that Nebraska does seemingly random big games from multiple conferences. It could be the SEC. It could be Pac-12. It could be ACC.
They've stuck with Pac-12 and ACC, typically. But man, they haven't done anything with the SEC.
Tennessee's coming up.
Yeah, that's great. But it's been a while. I mean, I think the last time Nebraska had home and homes with teams from the SEC, you got to go back to the 80s, don't you? I mean, you got home and home with South Carolina in the mid-80s. You had Auburn when they had Bo Jackson and pre-Bo Jackson in the early 80s. But other than that, I mean, in the 70s, it was LSU. They had LSU, a home and home with them. But or Alabama. I mean, they had Bama on the schedule in the late 70s, too. I don't know. I like the aggressiveness. But there's timing to everything, right?
Yeah,
when are you going to ramp up to be good to make these games? They'll matter. They'll draw eyeballs, but you don't want to not be ready for them.
Well, think about it. You had SC on the schedule when Nebraska happened to have Bill Callahan's program intercepting the program, right? Like, that. You finally get SC on the schedule. You finally get a home and home, and it's that outfit. You know, so like, yeah, come on. It could have been amazing. The atmosphere could have been amazing. Put it this way. I hope that tradition continues and that it doesn't all of a sudden transfer to, you know what, just going to play some regional games here. Going to rotate in between Kansas State, Iowa State, maybe a little Missouri. No.
How would you feel
about
that?
That's not going to work.
How would you feel about any of the Carolina schools? Like North Carolina, NC State, South Carolina, Clemson.
Yeah,
Would you do something with West Virginia? That'd be fun.
Yeah, Maybe. They don't interest me as much in terms of being a destination.
I think Georgia'd be a party. I think that'd be fun to get the dogs in.
That'd be good. Georgia, Alabama. You know, any of them southern schools would be pretty good. South Carolina, North Carolina.
Give me your top three right now. Mark Kranak is drafting three
top three non-con opponents.
Top three non-con. Mark Kranak is drafting for the state.
Am I doing this for how cool the road trip would be? Or
I'm doing this for how standpoint? I'm doing do this for how just how good it is encompassing everything. Roadie, also the home atmosphere, plus the magnitude of the two name matchups.
All right, give me LSU.
Okay.
They're up in there for sure. Give me, let's go Stanford.
Okay.
So you got LSU, Stanford. So you got kind of the West Coast. You got no Northern California. You got the swamp. You got Cajun down south. And then give me something on the East Coast. One of the Carolinas.
Okay.
You could do a little Asheville or something. Like whichever one's closest to Asheville. I don't know which one.
No clue for you. Okay.
Or Virginia, as long as they keep all the crazy, like, Klansmen and all that crap out of there.
Sure.
I would like to see Charlottesville, but not if
not that badly.
Holding rallies.
Yeah. you don't want to see it that bad.
I don't want to be.
Virginia is a bad football team right now, too.
But a great setting. And occasionally they, well, besides.
Aside, yes.
It's supposedly a very an amazing place to visit, except sometimes white supremacists descend on there, and that's not cool.
No. Okay, that's fine.
Yours.
Mine, I'm going, I want to see Nebraska-Notre Dame again. That was so much fun.
Really? That was a little overrated. That's a crappy part of the country.
Oh, the game was phenomenal.
The game was great. But Indiana is sort of South Bend.
I know. There's Notre Dame, the campus. There's Notre Dame, and then there's the rest of South Bend. I'm talking, you'll go see Touchdown Jesus again. I know you would as a Nebraska fan. And you'd love to have them come in. Give me Texas, and then give me Alabama. Notre Dame, Texas, Alabama. I'm done.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, but in terms of destinations, I see that's the beauty of the non-conference scheduling to me, is that it's not only the team, but it's also the setting, the surroundings, what you can do for the other like 3 to 4 days that you're in that area. And when you're talking about Notre Dame,
the other 3 to 4 days, you kick it in Chicago and you drive 2 hours east Friday night for the Saturday kickoff. I've solved your problem.
Fair. Because South Bend is pretty much Council Tucky's sister city. Let's be honest. Parts of Council Bluffs are amazing.
Just like parts of South Bend are amazing.
I'm talking about the cliche part that we all think of when we think of Council Tucky. That's South Bend. Don't need to do that. And then Alabama. I mean, come on. Like, do you really want to spend any time in Alabama? I mean, like, anytime.
I think there's a few golf courses it'd be fun to kick it down there at. Yeah, I could do. I can handle the deep south.
A little story about Alabama and golf courses.
Okay.
Driving down the old highway to Montgomery one time for the Division II College World Series. I was covering UNO.
Okay.
So you had to travel there from, you had to drive there from, what's the big city? The big city, Birmingham.
Birmingham.
Flew into Birmingham. We had to drive to Montgomery, which is south. Mm-hmm. And so you end up driving through straight up just rural Alabama. Oh my God. All right. Every cliche that you've heard, all the stereotypes, 1,000% true.
Give me an example.
Speaking of golf, so look, and down, if you haven't been in that part of the world, there's these Georgia pines that are just super tall, and it blankets the entire state. Mm. Not the entire state, but pretty much. Like it's a giant forest for the most part. So as you're driving down the highway, occasionally you see a break in the forest, And that's where Jeb just decided to pull over, set up shop, and have a family. I mean, it's not even like a city or anything. It's just like it's a clearing in the forest.
It's a clearing with a double wide.
Yes. And then, you know, there's a washer and dryer on the porch with plants growing out of it.
They've got indoor, outdoor options.
Grandma's sitting there rocking next to a washer and dryer with plants growing out of it. Jeb's walking around with his hat on backwards, no shirt, jeans, straw and cigarette in his mouth. Mm. Okay, so at one point, you just can't even believe you saw this. At one point, there was an airstrip, a fairly small, you couldn't even call it an airport, right? It's just like one of those small, a little hangar, little clearing. And there is a dude in like a Monte Carlo.
Mm-hmm.
You know those cars?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Trunk open. No shirt. Jeans. Sagging. Mm. Cracking. Not good.
Mm.
Trucker hat backwards.
Skinny or heavy?
Skinny. Just using it as his driving range.
Oh, my Lord.
He's taking wax on the airstrip with the trunk open. You're just like, is this happening? This is real, huh?
If you go to the driving range, you got to wear a shirt and sleeves.
I'll be right back. I'm going to go hit some balls. We'll hit some balls at the airfield.
Well, we'll take
you. So that's where you want to go, is what I'm saying. That's where you want to go. Let's go to Tuscaloosa.
I want to go to Brian Denny. Okay, I don't want to go watch Jethro work on his approach shot with no shirt on, playing Skinner.
That's why I go to Baton Rouge. That's why I go to Baton Rouge, because at least you get the Cajun food there,
right? And the Cajuns,
Creole. Right? At least you get that stuff.
Hmm.
How? By the way, how is it 7:33 already?
I have no. We're gonna erase every second of this first segment. It's okay.
Yeah, it wasn't very good.
No, it's fine. We got into a little scheduling.
I blame Colton.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Colton's smiling at us. We'll go do some penance for this first half hour of your morning, and we'll do so at Madonna Proactive. Krainak, time to get that summer body in shape, in action. Madonna Proactive, 56th and Pine Lake Road, one of the nicest clubs in Lincoln. Do you want to do some yoga? Do you want to do some free weights? Do you want to check out the hammer strength machines to tone up and get fit? How about the TRX studio? Over 130 classes offered with your membership at Madonna Proactive, 56 and Pine Lake Road, 402-420-0000. Maybe you're looking for a place to take the kids, take yourself, take mama, and sit by the pool. What a wonderful outdoor swimming and children's facility they have to go swim, to go relax, to go sit in the sun. And wow, it's big time. Be sure to make your appointment. You don't even really need an appointment. Just give them a ring and say, hey, I want to go to Madonna Proactive, check out the outdoor swimming facilities, the summer membership opportunities. And oh, yes, I want to find a way to get better when it comes to fitness, wellness, and my health goals. Madonna Proactive, 56th and Pine Lake Road here in Lincoln, madonnaproactive.org, and can give them a shout today, 402-420-0000.
And that's where you can meet Schmidt.
Yeah.
You're going to be shaking hands there all weekend, I hear, with hairy shoulders, right?
No, I don't have hairy shoulders, but I will be lifted. Boom.
Whoa. Protein.
Yep. We will continue this weird first hour with some thoughts on how haunted some LA hotels are, what Taiwan is like, the meat sculpture that Mike Leach saw, some Oregon offense, some Bill Moose thoughts, and the expectation of graduating fifth grade. The Rewind segment's next. It's our favorite pirate, Mike Leach, when we continue Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Now back with Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery, with Chris Schmidt and Mark Krainak.
Mike Leach is with us, Hail Varsity Radio. So, Coach, tell me about your trip abroad. We always catch up after spring ball, and thank you kindly for the time. But you are the world traveler. I love hearing about your stories. I loved hearing about Cuba. I loved hearing about, not Australia, but you went somewhere for rugby one time.
Oh, to Wales, yeah.
Yeah, Wales. And now you just...
Oh, well, New Zealand.
Yes, New Zealand.
I saw the All Blacks as well. Okay, so we were in, basically, I was with a delegation of, you know, a couple state senators and a state representative. And we were, well, I mean, obviously, there's a lot of connections between Asia and the state of Washington. And there's a lot of business done. And those guys had an interest in expanding that. You know, me personally and Washington State has an interest in, you know, getting more students at Washington State and elevating the name of Washington State. And you know, it would really be a cool deal if we had a number of, you know, students from these countries, you know, that foreign students from these countries. And professors went back and forth. So it was an opportunity for me to help elevate that, even though for a lot of the elements of it, I was tagging along. So it was really cool that way. And so we got to go to Cambodia and Taiwan. Now, Cambodia not had a great deal of connections United States recently, but it sure would be nice if a business relationship and some with Cambodia and some students up here at Washington State. And so I had the opportunity to go there. Just a gorgeous, gorgeous country. It has some third world qualities to it. The government officials, I think, are very eager to a better relationship with the U.S. and economically and things. And then went to Angkor Wat, which is all those fancy ancient temples like that are on Lara Croft Tomb Raider. Just gorgeous. Look up on your phone or wherever you can, the floating villages of Cambodia. One of the most amazing sights I've seen.
That's pretty awesome. Now, the question asked, and when I think of art museums, I think of the montage from Ferris Bueller's, the movie, okay?
Oh, No, this was wild. So this was in Taiwan.
Right, the meat-shaped stone. Did you feel anything other than hunger when you saw it?
Well, we were in. Now, I don't know how much the artist worked on that stone. And obviously, you know, since we were kids, people are picking up. This was in the National Museum in Taiwan.
Right.
You know, there was that. And then that jade sculpture, which I think was a cabbage or something. You know, the meat stone, you know, since we were kids, everybody's picked up rocks and said, hey, this looks like this or that looks like that. That meat stone did look like a piece of pork with the skin still on it. And then probably even more prestigious than that, I just can't remember. It seems to me it was cabbage. But regardless of whether I get my vegetables confused here, either way, it was an impressive sculpture, but what struck me was they have the enthusiasm around that, like, say, the Mona Lisa. I mean, this is one of those deals where you have to wait to get in there. You know, you have to all kinds of heads trying to look at the same exhibit. And how these two found their way to the top, I'm still kind of searching for the answer to that. It was impressive, and part of what was impressive is you drew from the enthusiasm of everybody wanting to see it. I don't know how they were selected as the most distinguished.
Mike Leach, Washington State head coach, with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Great to get caught up with the coach back from his tour abroad. Coach, I want to sneak in a football question here. And what did your take? You played Oregon for a number of years. Coach Frost is getting things rolling. And he was hiking the Grand Canyon yesterday. I'll ask you about hiking the Grand Canyon in a second if you've done it or not. But what kind of wows you about the Oregon offense and the tempo they ran at? That's the goal here at Nebraska.
Well, you know, they don't have a ton of plays. They don't have a ton of plays. They just fire them at you really fast. And it's kind of important to them that, you know, they have a quarterback that can run. They'll be more effective if that quarterback's a good runner. You know, and we had pretty good luck with the Oregon offense. You know, I mean, it's like they're going to score some points and they're going to big play in. They're going to... get a lick in on you. I just think it was a good, solid overall offense that attacked the whole field. And, you know, they get it in the hands of their key guys, and they have the ability to get it in the hands of a variety of their key guys. And then Oregon was so fast, you know.
Yeah. Coach, I want to ask you about, okay, I'm looking at your Twitter feed, and you sent out a tweet a while back about haunted highways and byways. Have you ever stayed in a haunted house?
Shoot, I think my mother-in-law's house is haunted, but I mean, she's a great lady, but
okay,
there's this one bedroom that's got some wild stuff.
What's gone on? What happened there?
Oh, you know, just I guess the furniture belonged to a relative and stuff, and it's really more of a vibe than anything else. But there was a room I stayed in at the Roosevelt Hotel years ago in Los Angeles. It's in Hollywood, the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel. And the person at the desk said that the room was supposed to be haunted. And then, you know, I stayed up all night hoping I'd see something. I didn't stay up all night. I mean, I'd sleep and try to pretend to sleep so the ghost would think I was asleep so I could catch him. But no such luck. I think the ghosts are onto those that want to see him. And so I think they make it difficult. But I never saw a ghost there, but the room's supposed to be haunted, and people, I guess, have either run out of that room because they had a bad experience or try to rent that room because they're hoping they see one. Me, I just got there late, and that's all that was left, and they were trying to not rent it, but I already had a reservation, and there was a certain amount of negotiation between the girl at the desk and the manager as to whether they're going to let me in there, because I guess somebody'd had a tough time and left or something. But, you know, I'm stuck there in L.A. at 10 p.m., have to get up early in the morning, and it's hard enough to get hotels as it was. And I just made it clear I was going to either sleep in their lobby or I was going to sleep in the room that they promised me that I'd reserved 2 weeks before. And so they sent me up to the haunted room, and we had an agreement that you know, if I got scared and ran out of the room, then I took my own chances, you know, no harm, no foul. And so I don't know. I didn't get to see. I didn't see anything. And so then, but it was a really cool room. I mean, it's a cool old Hollywood room, like from the standpoint. You walked into it. It had a great view. Look down Hollywood Strip, down the street, Hollywood Boulevard, across the street, Man's Chinese Theater. Okay, then the other thing, it was one of those that you walk in, and there's like a sitting room. It's like a suite. So there's a sitting room with this old furniture, really cool moldings on the wall. And actually a library, kind of a library, okay? And then there was a fireplace, which hasn't been used in years, and it did cross my mind how much fun it would be to go find some wood and stoke up that fireplace, but I imagine they'd get upset. And then the bathroom, you know, kind of those chicken wire floors, those old fixtures. You know, some marble countertop, you know, one of those big tubs with the feet and everything. And anyway, so the bed, again, was right on the corner, kind of an upper corner of that hotel, where one window's looking right down the boulevard and the other's right across the street. So it was a very cool setting. You know, as far as the ghosts, well, from my experience, maybe not as many ghosts as advertised, but still a great room. And I forget which one it is, but if you can get in there, and I highly recommend it.
A couple more minutes. Mike Leach with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Washington State head coach, back from his travels. We're talking summer vacations. And, Coach, a thought here from you. your last day of school in grade school. Do you remember it? How did you celebrate it? My little guy is going to be moving on from fifth grade. I've explained to him that you're supposed to do that. But nonetheless, there's a celebration tomorrow I will be at. But did you? How'd you celebrate getting out of grade school?
Yeah, they expected you to get out of grade school back then.
Thank you.
I mean, is that the wildest thing? We're graduating from everything around here. We're graduating kindergarten, fifth grade. With all due respect to your son, and with that, I want to send him my very best wishes on his graduation and for graduating fifth grade. He'll always be a hero in my mind. But the thing is, the thing about it is, are you kidding me? I mean, fifth grade's a tweener grade.
I can't get out of this. I got to go tomorrow. I can't get out of it.
Fifth grade's a tweener grade. I mean, uh-huh. I mean, fifth grade's like, okay. No, I mean, now I don't know how they split it up nowadays. But when
I'll
I
be going
kid,
to junior high next year in sixth. So.
Oh, really? Because our junior high year was seventh.
Okay. Yeah, so that's what mine was, too.
I guess if it's a transition to junior high, that makes more sense, but still not very much. I mean, I don't know what Lincoln's like, but in Cody, Wyoming, there weren't a lot of fifth grade dropouts running around the street and, little kids with cigarettes rolled up in their T-shirts and, thugs beating up the other kids, dead end path.
It's my soccer ball, coach. Yeah,
riding around in souped up tricycles or bicycles or riding around in souped up bicycles, So, I don't know. When I grew up, it was assumed you would successfully get through fifth grade. That was call us arrogant, but we felt like it was our birthright.
No, I got you. I got you.
Then, of course, seventh, there's a break-in when you go into junior high. You go in there, it's kind of older kids or whatever. And then, see, our junior high had ninth grade, too. So
yep.
Our junior high was seventh, eighth, and ninth, which not everybody does it that way.
Coach, a last thought. No, I wanted to get you a last thought. Sorry to interrupt you on that. But Bill Moose, man, what did Bill do for Washington State football with those new facilities that you guys are in now?
He's a total stud. Bill Moose is a fantastic guy and a personal friend of mine. And, along with Washington State and the vision, he and our board of regents, our president, everybody had inspired me to come to Washington State. And he did a tremendous job. I think he did a great job. I'll tell you what he really brings to a program is tremendous energy. He brings a lot of energy to a program and a lot of optimism. He makes the coaches, the players, the whole program feel like they got the chance to do something special. And I thought he did a fantastic job here. And I think also contributed to a fairly seamless transition here with the fine people I have to work with here now.
Mike Leach with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, we'll get caught up again. I'll give you a shout this summer, and we'll be in touch. Always love just chatting with you, man. It was fun, and that's right. The fifth grade's a birthright. I love it. That's a T-shirt.
No, we figured not. You get through fifth grade. I mean, I can just imagine the expression on my dad's face. Dad, I'm dropping out of fifth grade. No, I'm hitting the streets. I'm going off on my own, I've gone to my share of, I've got four kids, and I've gone to my share of graduations, too. And I actually missed one once that they still remind me of, but
yeah, I'm sure that's the hey, yeah, you weren't there, yeah, that, yeah,
oh, yeah, they let you know that now,
yeah, coach. We'll talk soon. Thanks again.
All right, I appreciate it.
It's a pirate, Mike Leach. Quick hour. Brandon Vogel, Gary Sharp, more Mark Kranak, and Hail Varsity continues. Hour two on the way, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Great to have you back. Hour two, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, Colton Stone. We got through that first hour, Kranak, thanks to Mike Leach. We talked
got smoke. Through it. God, am I that tough of a co-host?
No, you're fantastic. I was speaking more about you getting through it with me.
Oh, okay. Ever the humble one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks, Chris. Making me feel awesome on a Saturday Memorial Day weekend.
Well, hey, remember those who've served and salute for sure. Spend time with family and friends this weekend. One of our friends, we love catching up with him, Brandon Vogel of HailVarsity.com and magazine. Kranak, you have better options than me to ask about grilling.
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
And smoking. Brandon Vogel has the floor now. Vogues, good morning, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're okay. We started off the show with a barbecue question regarding smokers or grills, and I have my opinion, but you're pretty awesome at it. So, Kranak, without further ado, why don't you get the lowdown from Vogues?
All right, here's the deal, Brandon. I got an electric smoker. I barely use it. It's glass front, you know. Kind of a tower one. I don't know why. It's just something about it. I've tried a couple things on it, and they turned out horrible. So I'm thinking of a pellet grill, maybe. Because right now I just have a charcoal grill and this electric smoker. The charcoal grill, I'm not going to get rid of it. You know, it's sort of an antique in some ways. But I'm just trying to figure out what is my best sort of all-in-one option for all types of different approaches to food.
If you're not opposed to continuing to use charcoal, it's probably something along the lines of Big Green Egg. That'll allow you to smoke as well as just grill. I'm partial to the Weber Smoky Mountain Cooker, which is like entry-level smoker. But you can drop the grates down on there. Like if you just want to grill something quickly, you can make it work, though it's not designed for that. But yeah, it seems like the Big Green Egg is kind of that all-encompassing grill tool, and you'll certainly pay for that privilege.
So you would go that over like the pellet grills? What's your pellet grill aversion?
I don't really have one because I've never used one. I just prefer cooking on charcoal entirely. Why? It feels a little bit more classic, I guess. I said, I've never used a pellet grill. Like, so the camp that I'm in is I have this entry level smoker, but like what I want to do someday is have one where you can just actually burn logs, and it will be a huge pain in the ass, and I'll probably never use it. But
you theory,
it, that all sounds good to me.
Yeah. Go chop down a tree and just jam it in there and throw a carcass in there and see what happens.
And on Vogue's trip to Alabama, we were talking about scheduling. There's plenty of trees to chop down, and as long as he's avoiding the shirtless guy hitting golf balls on an airstrip, we should be okay.
I'm not exaggerating about rural Alabama is exactly the stereotype of rural Alabama. I mean, am I wrong there? Brandy, you've driven through there before, haven't you? It is as sort of backwoods as, like, that. What you hear is not an exaggeration.
No, it's not. In my potential road trips destinations, I'd probably skip over Alabama. You can maybe talk me into Auburn. Like, Auburn's way down there, and it's kind of, like, self-contained, and you drive through a bunch of trees and then open up on this, like, picturesque college town. Tuscaloosa is fine. You've got every chain restaurant you could ever want, and it feels like that.
Brandon Vogel's with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine, at Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter. Vogues, let's spend a little bit of time here on Scott Frost v. Chip Kelly. And Greg Smith did a great job of kind of running down some quarterbacks both coaches are really interested in for 2019. And I'm fascinated moving forward with both of those guys in the offense. And Scott Frost's offense will be a little different than Chip Kelly's. Design with the run game emphasis and the quarterback run, but maybe a tweak here or there from a physicality standpoint, or at least the emphasis on physicality. If you're a prospect right now for 2019, 2020, 2021, these are the two guys, if you're a dual threat, you want to go play for, man. And I think as college football seasons continue to come our way, I'm anxious to see how things shake out in the recruiting, in the living room, and then eventually on the field with both of these guys, the mentor, the mentee, and the emphasis on the skill sets they want at quarterback.
Yeah, they can certainly cast a wide net with, I think that's both part of their confidence and their ability to teach their quarterbacks to do what they want them to do. And then also just what the offense asks those quarterbacks to do, you know, to go up tempo like that. And in a lot of cases, it's a really simplified read. You're not so much reacting to the defense as dictating to it. So you're not taking a 5 or 7 step drop, of course, and trying to read what the defense is doing and then make your decision. It's all happening much quicker than that. And for that to be possible, you have to, you know, really boil things down to sort of which players you're putting in conflict. And if this guy goes here, you go there. Opposite. So I think part of that, all of that makes it easy for them to look at a wide range of guys. It probably also means that they're missing, they're not going to land a lot of those quarterbacks who are considering USC, you know, the NFL draft darlings 4 years from now. Those guys probably aren't going to get a long look from Nebraska, but I think that's okay.
Brandon Vogel is with us on Hail Varsity Radio as we talk Nebraska and quarterbacks. So who's going to start this year, Brandon? Just go ahead and tell us right now. Who's starting?
That's probably still Adrian Martinez. I think just in terms of his ability to run, and you know, that doesn't eliminate Jebbia immediately in my mind, because from what I've watched, you know, those quarterback runs are more a matter of can you do it when we want a sort of constraint play rather than a direct weapon of the offense. I mean, it can be that a little bit, but it's just when the read says to pull it and go, how badly can you hurt teams? And I still think that Martinez is the best option on the roster currently to do that. Bedrill also brings you some of that, but he's expected to not be available, though. Maybe he will be. That would certainly make things interesting.
Vogues, do you foresee a shift, or not even a shift, but just, okay, say if you get a guy that is that great with his legs, will it be shifted to becoming a direct weapon of the offense, the quarterback run, the quarterback keep, or do you see much veering off of the average 8 to 12 carry kind of numbers they want to they've stayed with where they've been?
Oh no, I think it could be, and that's one of the parts of this offense and Frost as a whole that probably, well, it's hard to look at it now just because the sample size is so limited, but they will adjust to what their quarterback can do, I think. So there is a possibility that some of those, you know, if you've got a guy who's a really great runner and it's taken a little while to get him up to speed on the passing front, I wouldn't be surprised to see them lean on that quite a bit. I mean, you know, one of Adrian Martinez's touchdowns on in the spring game was a classic QB draw. You know, so those sorts of things are in there. We know that Frost is certainly capable of and well aware of how dangerous things like that can be. So if you've got a guy who's great at it, go to your strengths.
Is Nebraska entering the territory of, I'm thinking Washington State, I'm thinking Texas Tech, Oklahoma State, where you basically just, it almost doesn't matter who's playing. You're putting up points because there is a particular system in place. Is Nebraska entering that sort of territory, you think?
I think they could be. I mean, that's what Oregon was during the Chip Kelly years, really. They brought in a fleet of running backs year after year. They had some really good quarterbacks, but it almost felt not incidental, but like you said, you know, who the personnel was sort of took a slight backseat to what they were running and their ability to execute it. So if things get going in the right direction, I think that is what Nebraska eventually becomes.
Brandon Vogel's with us this morning, HailVarsity.com and magazine at Brandon L. Vogel. Vogues, I'm fascinated by the confidence and then the results of Coach Mario and Coach Frost with their quarterbacks. We've spent some time on that. You've a couple of times this week, you've gone back to year one. Folks have maybe seen that on HailVarsity.com. If they haven't, touch on what kind of inspired you to do stories and do some research with this year one of Central Florida, what it looked like with McKenzie, and then what you kind of got out of it when doing some of that work.
Yeah, I decided to go back and look at the losses specifically. So UCF went 6-7 that year, just to see, like, okay, 6-7 is a good year when you're coming from 0-12, but like, what was actually happening? You can look at the wins and kind of understand, okay, well, they beat a pretty good team here. Well, this was South Carolina State in the opener. Of course, they were going to win that one. But the losses, I think, give you an opportunity to say, were they getting better? What was happening here? What was sort of some of the context around it? So far at that, I've gotten through Michigan and Maryland, which is an interesting two games, because they're both Big Ten teams. One was on the road, Michigan, and one was at home against Maryland. And you kind of got to see that Maryland team was pretty good relative to Maryland. Certainly had an explosive offense. It was DJ Durkin's first year. And UCF, from a statistical standpoint, you know, that was a coin flip game. They ended up losing it on a really strange and reviewed fumble call. That was probably legit, but that one came right down to the wire. So when you're looking at UCF 6-7, based on that game at least, you could say, well, this was at least the equivalent of Maryland in the Big Ten for that season, or pretty close to it.
So what was your, I guess, overall takeaway about that team in terms of, you know, maybe what took the longest, I guess, for them to develop? What were some of their maybe early season characteristics versus later in the season? Any takeaways there?
So far, you know, having looked closely at two games, the second of which was McKenzie Milton's first start, I think it's, based on that at least, it's apparent that the passing game efficiency, and this isn't a surprise, they dealt with injuries at quarterback, they switched quarterbacks, and Milton was a true freshman, was a little bit slow coming. That part of it was the part that, you know, they still had to fill in. And then you saw in 2017, where they had ultimate efficiency in that passing game with Milton again, what this offense could do. Because there's a lot of the same guys that became big numbers producers in 2017. You know, Jordan Akins, Tre'Quan Smith, Killens, they were all there. And those guys were still showing those flashes and that same mentality of, hey, we're going to go fast and we're going to attack. They just dealt with a little bit of shakiness at quarterback, which is to be expected.
Who's the dude on the YouTube video you found that you posted with Killens going for 87 against Michigan? He gone. Who's the he gone guy? That was awesome.
It was awesome. I don't remember his exact name, but his YouTube handle is like LSU Grandpa or Father or something. So I like to think that, you know, someone in his family plays for LSU, and he just decided to watch this Michigan UCF game in 2016, and came away really impressed by UCF's speed, and specifically told Harbaugh on the TV, at least, don't be surprised, you know they're slow, which is my favorite part.
it was so good, and put him in the Wildcat, put him in it all day. It was good. You gotta check that out on Vogue's Hot Reads this week. Quarterback recruiting's kind of heating up and cranking up. We touched on that. We touched on the development. Sticking with the lines here, three numbers are out for Nebraska this season, -17.5 at Wisconsin, -8 at Iowa, -6 at Northwestern. Okay, of those three, here and now, we don't know who the quarterback's going to be. We don't know who's the starting 22. Of those three games, is there one that you're sure, yes, give me Nebraska and the points? There's one you're like, no, I'm staying away. What was your immediate reaction with those three that have been presented as the 2018 appetizers here from Vegas for Nebraska fans and for the Big Ten?
Yeah, I'd probably take Wisconsin, Wisconsin line, take Nebraska in that game. Not because I don't think it's close to being right. Well, I guess I do think that if I'm going to take it. Wisconsin's going to be good. Like, they're going to be really good. It's going to be tough, I think, for them to be better than last year, though it's certainly on the table. But I think when you look at what Wisconsin means in the division right now, and the coaching staff at Nebraska, of course, knows that, I expect Nebraska to go into those bigger games like that and really at least execute well, which should keep things pretty close. Strangely, the Northwestern line at -6, that one would be probably the toughest one for me to take, because, you know, you could play pretty straight up with Northwestern and still lose by a touchdown, and that wouldn't be a bad result nor a surprising one, I don't think.
Brandon Vogel with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Let's skip over to Bill Moose real quick and some changes. You know, did some changes with the golf and tennis programs or I don't know, some of the programs that no one really pays attention to. But then he makes some changes at the top of the Athletic Performance Lab and at the top of Nebraska Nutrition. Just curious on any takeaways you might have there and maybe what it says.
I found it to be pretty encouraging. Well, not really knowing much, and I haven't dug into this at all, but that's always sort of been there, and it looks nice and it sounds good. But for if Nebraska was seeing benefits from that in their football program, it wasn't showing up on the field. So I look at it a little bit from that. I'm kind of like, yeah, you know, maybe that's a resource that hasn't been maximized to this point. And I think it's also just kind of a further sign of how much is being committed to get Nebraska's front porch program football back up to speed. You know, you look at that, and we know that this coaching staff has very specific ideas about nutrition. So it makes sense that they would want somebody who's kind of aligned with what those things are.
You know, it's funny. Remember when the Athletic Performance Lab came out? And I think we all talked about it, where it's just like, man, that is a huge advantage that Nebraska has there that no one else is doing. It's essentially a sports science lab. And you're like, wow, this is great. But you almost haven't heard about it since then. Right?
You haven't. Other than Paul Pogba, yeah. European soccer star, coming over for really cool videos and some rehab work. That's kind of the most notable that I can remember in recent years.
Yeah, it's just sort of this thing that's off to the side where you're like, what are they actually doing there? And I guess maybe that's the whole point of it. So say Nebraska, because I think when they first had it and we were talking about it, what potential advantage is it for Nebraska?
Well, I think if you get everybody aligned, and this is across multiple sports, so that's something of a challenge, but being able to think about things like sleep studies and sort of the morning practice stuff. You know, I mean, and there's a lot of research out there on these things, but being able to do some of your own and potentially fine tune it to your specific teams and athletes is probably the biggest potential advantage in my mind. And in the past, this has, you know, largely been the domain of coaches. We know that Frost thinks and talks about those things. We know that John Cook does as well. But that's because they kind of realize the advantage in it. So the advantage of the performance lab in my mind is, okay, you have professionals, you should have some of the leaders in the industry in that area. Can they kind of convey it to everyone and really give you, and you're talking about small advantages here, but you never know when that's going to provide the difference. Can they provide that sort of university-wide?
Vogues, you're putting some finishing touches on the Hail Varsity Yearbook 2018. Tease me. What's exciting you, and what's left for you?
There's a lot of work left for me still this week and over the next couple. I'm really excited about it on a couple of fronts. I think our complement of features, you know, the things that you're going to sit down and read at whatever pace you want to over the summer, are really unique and different, probably our best complement of features that we put together for this thing. And I felt pretty good about past ones, too. So that'll be fun. Visually, I think it's going to look a lot like the Hail Varsity Yearbook you've come to enjoy, hopefully, in past years, but also going to be a bit of a departure in other ways. And I'm really excited to see how that part of it comes together, because we're trying some new things there.
Brandon Vogel, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Subscribe today. Get that yearbook handled, 855-3-HUSKER, or can log on HailVarsity.com/subscribe. And you can bundle it, the premium content on the website with the magazine. That's a great option for you as a Nebraska fan before year one of Scott Frost. Vogues, have a great holiday weekend. Thanks for your time today, bud. Always fun chatting.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Take care. There he is, Brandon Vogel, man. With his Hail Varsity Radio. A timeout. Shortly, we'll run down Gary Sharp, the Iron Horse. I want to tell you about Rick and your friends at Sauter Heyman. Mark Kranak is feverishly writing this down. Pure-grown diamonds are beautiful. They're affordable, and they're exclusively at Sauter Heyman. Go see Rick and your friends this holiday weekend and just see how beautiful pure-grown diamonds are. They're grown in a lab instead of mined from the earth. All the characteristics of earth-mined diamonds, and they're 10 to 40% less than traditional earth-mined diamonds. They're eco-friendly. They're 100% sustainable. And they have been selling so amazingly at Sauter Heyman, some of the biggest and best sellers in Sauter Heyman history. So, locations for you in Lincoln at Sauter Heyman, 12th and O downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion Lincoln, or if you're out west, go see Sauter Heyman in Grand Island. SauterHeyman.com, your exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds here in Nebraska, Sauter Heyman Jewelers. Okay, a quick timeout, and the Iron Horse, Gary Sharp, is next. Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Early to rise with Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Here's Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranak.
Good stuff from Brandon Vogel. We welcome in the Iron Horse this holiday weekend, Gary Sharp. Sharpie, good morning, sir. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Smitty. How are you?
Doing all right, man. Doing all right. We'll start off. James Palmer Jr. back. Not a shock, but still good news for Coach Miles. No word yet on Cope. But with Palmer back, expectations, let's fast forward here. Are you thinking, okay, this team, because Palmer is back, knowing what else is likely to return or should return, that 20-win number, should that be the expectation? Should that be the demand?
Well, I think the Big Ten will be a little bit stronger from top to bottom. But I think Nebraska, and again, this is a little bit hinges on Copeland returning. We'll get to that in a moment. But with James coming back, Nebraska is going to show up in a lot of preseason picks as 3, 4, 5 in the league, and rightfully so. I hope with James and going out and working out for NBA teams, he got great feedback that he can work on his game, but he can also pass along some of the knowledge that he gained to make that team better. Because if Palmer and Copeland are both back, you still have to figure out how are you efficient on offense. You just can't rely on those two. And then you've got to coach up some of the younger guys to get them going and then watch James' game evolve. I think it's big for Nebraska because this is an off season where you didn't really need any hiccups. You know, you got Kenya Hunter who moved on to promote himself in his business, in his profession, but you don't have mass departures. You don't have any headaches that keep you up late at night. And you can say that Nebraska's kind of, even with losing a quality assistant like Kenya Hunter, replacing with Armand Gates, you've won the offseason. And we haven't been able to say that about Nebraska basketball. But I think James coming back will help that team immensely. I mean, why wouldn't you want a guy that scores like he does? Mm-hmm. But I also think there are things that he will make the team better and help guys that need to step up in 18-19.
Between Copeland, Palmer, and Roby, you're an NBA GM. Who are you taking?
Well, I think Isaiah Roby with a good year, Mark, next year could possibly be a first-round draft pick.
Yep.
If his game continues to evolve, the kind of body that he has, where he can play, and if he can play on all three levels, then I think he has a chance, because the NBA drafts on potential, that Isaiah Roby with a strong junior year could play himself into possibly being mentioned as a first-round draft pick. Now, Isaac Copeland, I think we're going to wait a couple of more days. I kind of thought going into this that Nebraska would go 1-1, and not necessarily because Copeland is a slam-dunk NBA-type guy. 23 years old, and I'm sure he's gotten a lot of information about his game, and he may just want to go and play pro basketball. He may not want to come back and play with a bunch of high school guys, and that's his choice. Good for him. Now, if he comes back, it's definitely a bonus for Nebraska, because you return an 18-point score and a guy that was shooting nearly 43% from beyond the arc. But I think we got to wait a couple of days on Copeland and his decision, and I've always thought 1-for-1. Nebraska's got one. Can they go 2-for-2? We'll see. Before Wednesday.
Sharp, you want to switch over to football and scheduling, and the Black Friday showdown with Iowa will be resumed, and that got locked up by Mr. Moose. You have things almost finalized with Nebraska-Minnesota for that Black Friday stretch before the Iowa thing resumes. There was some talk about Big 8/Big 12 schools back on the non-conference roster. I asked Kranak, give me your top three draft picks, and his picks were good. He liked LSU. I went Notre Dame, Bama. Who else did I pick? Notre Dame, Bama. They were up there. Texas were my three. Do you have a couple three teams in mind you'd love to sprinkle in as an option for the non-conference? Nebraska's got some good squads on the docket. You got Oklahoma, you got Colorado, you have Tennessee, you have Arizona in the next 10 to 15 years. But what's your wish list look like?
Well, I think first and foremost it would be the University of Texas. I think Nebraska and Texas playing two huge brands, but also it would finally be us as fans able to get all the angst out with Texas right in front of you. To get all that memory of the departure of the Big 12, you'd have two programs that you think by the time that there would be an opening on their non-conference schedules would be playing at a high level. I'd like to see Texas. Now, I've always thought this about scheduling, and I think Nebraska does a very good job in their scheduling with a name non-conference, a paper tiger non-conference, and then a game that, you know, 112 people are going to get to play in. I think Nebraska's always kind of had that scheduling philosophy, and I like it. But I'd like it to them also to have a scheduling philosophy over a 10-year span where they try and play where they recruit. Like you could find somebody to play a home and home in Florida, home and home in Texas, a home and home in California. I wouldn't mind seeing a revival of the USC series. I also, and I've been mentioning this for a while now, I would like to see, because there was a lot of you know, fan fighting and player fighting, I would like to see Nebraska and Mizzou get together at Arrowhead Stadium, if you could pull that off. But I think eventually, if Nebraska gets to where they think they are, they think they can be, and they're rolling, I wouldn't be surprised in 3-4 years if Nebraska shows up in a Jerry's World game to kick off the season, because you get all that attention, you're going to play a name opponent, all eyeballs are on you for the most part on the opening day of college football. I think that would be a big step for Nebraska. But I know a lot of this discussion, and I'll ask you guys this question. People have brought up immediately Kansas State because they're close to Lincoln. Everybody can drive down. Everybody remembers driving up and down 77 to go to Manhattan or people coming up to Lincoln. But if Bill Snyder's not on the sidelines at K-State, is K-State really do you really want to play Kansas State? Because it was all about Bill Snyder, mm-hmm. seeing him on the sidelines and the resurrection of that program and them trying to reach up and knock off Nebraska. And you hated Bill Snyder. You respected what he did, but he didn't like him. I mean, look, remember when the Ron Prince era was there? We were like, Kansas State. But with Bill Snyder there, it was like, we got to beat Snyder.
No, if he's there, that'd be all right, okay? But he isn't going to be there. I mean, in the next, he'll be retired within 2 years. It'd be my bet. Now, I'll probably be wrong with that because he's continued to keep trucking, and good for him. And they're always like sneaky good. They'll end up with they'll sneak in an 11-2 year and knock off OU on the road or something like that every 3 or 4 years. It seems like they build back up. But I don't even know. I know who he wants to replace him, but I don't know who the powers that be down there want to replace him. Let's take it a step further. Who takes his job if he isn't able to give it to his son?
There's, I think, Jim Leavitt.
Okay.
Moved from South Florida, Colorado, now at Oregon. I think he's a distinct possibility. If I was Gene Taylor, their athletic director, who hasn't been there long, I would see, hey, Brent Venables, you've turned down a lot of opportunities. Is this the time for you to come home? But you're also going to run into the issue at Kansas State where who wants to replace Bill Snyder?
Right.
And especially if there's some angst, if his son doesn't get it, you're walking into that. And you might not have the support of Bill Snyder if you're not one from the family.
You know, we talked about this last week, talking about replacing a legend. You know, Frank Solich did that with T.O. We know how it went down with Frank. Thank you, Steve Peterson, for nothing. A lot of talk about whether or not Frank's going to come back. He's coming back to the Outlands. That seems totally appropriate, doesn't it? What's your takeaway on Frank's return to Nebraska?
I was a little bit surprised, actually, Mark, that it was that soon. Not surprised that he's coming back, but that soon. You know, like we were talking last week, I don't think Frank wants a victory tour. But I think the olive branch set out for him, I think Frank just wants to be respected for his time here as a player assistant and a head coach. And if this is the start of that, then I think that's a good step for everybody. And it's maybe a closure on Frank's football life. You know, he's been a football coach at Ohio going into his 14th year. If you were just a college football fan and you ran into Frank Solich in the airport, would you go, hey, there goes the Ohio head coach? Or would you say, oh, there goes the former Nebraska head coach?
Yeah.
I almost tend to think that more people know him now as an Ohio guy because it's been a while since he's been here. But it's good for everybody. And I think Frank will really, really enjoy the event. You know, he's been back here before. I said, I think it's the last week. A couple years ago, I saw him pumping gas. He was in town recruiting, stopped, talked to him. He's always very gracious. But I think he wants people to respect what he did and the challenges that he had. But to know him as a guy that was part of Nebraska football as a player assistant and a head coach, and it'll be a really, really neat event come January. And I'm sure when we get to that point, Frank will really appreciate it. And I can tell you that he'll be very emotional. I can see him very, very emotional. He doesn't show it a lot, but I think an event like that, especially with Coach Osborne and probably Coach Frost will be involved, that Frank will enjoy the night. And, you know, maybe he'll tell some stories as well.
Gary Sharp's with us, Hale Varsity Radio. Sharpie, if you're a 17, 18-year-old high school dual threat quarterback, who has the advantage right now when they come visit you, Scott Frost or Chip Kelly?
Well, that's a tough one because they both think they can fix any quarterback out there and turn them into what they want. You know what? That might be a push because both are well-known. Let's talk about Nebraska, though. If you look at, and I'll ask Mark, you can answer this. I was thinking about this the other day, looking at quarterbacks that are recruiting for 2019. And you have the head coach and his quarterback coach who are basically quarterback whisperers, and they believe that they can fix any flaw that a quarterback might have, or if a quarterback is raw, turn him into something that benefits their offense and makes them really good at the Division I level. If this current staff had been recruiting out in California a few years ago, and they saw a guy that was not only a dual-threat quarterback but played two positions, he was one of the best safeties in the state of California, but he was also a really good quarterback. Do Do you think this staff would have recruited Lamar Jackson specifically as a quarterback or, as the previous staff did, saw him more as a defensive back? I think they would have recruited him as a quarterback. So I think that gives you some insight to how these guys kind of look at quarterbacks. But it's now, you know, you got the new coach smell where Chip Kelly has the new coach smell, but he also has, hey, you know, I went out and we had a couple of really, really good quarterbacks in Oregon. I think Scott Frost is starting to get into that, where you can use Mackenzie Milton as a poster child, and then whoever is your quarterback here to sell to other people. But that's a really good question. But, Mark, do you think Lamar Jackson would have been recruited as a quarterback today more by this staff than the previous staff?
I think he fits. I really do. I think he fits what they're looking for. There, maybe they wouldn't have, only because he's a bit more of a long strider. And it seems like they value that shake and bake. And I'm not sure Lamar demonstrated a ton of the shake and bake. Right? And I think that's sort of the difference with Adrian. He's a long strider, but that dude will juke you too. Right?
Yeah.
I don't know. But you talk about the quarterback universe just opening up for these guys. My goodness. What do they have? Like 19, 20 offers out there? And
yes.
Half of the guys that they have out there, nobody's recruiting him as a quarterback. And, you know, we were talking to Brandon about it a little bit in the last segment. Is Nebraska entering the territory to where it's sort of like Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, Washington State, where, I mean, it's the same offense and the same production every single year, no matter who's playing? Is Nebraska about to get to that sort of kind of system level, in your opinion?
Kind of where it's, and maybe this is a, you know, doing disservice to the offense when you use this term, but are you thinking like plug and play? You coach a quarterback up, he's got mind over feet and arm that he can just walk right in, and this system is set up where a quarterback that has those strengths can just keep running with it.
Yeah, I mean,
I would agree. I would agree, and those are two really good programs. You're right. It doesn't matter who the guy is slinging the ball. Seems like they put up big numbers and they have success, especially at Oklahoma State.
Now we also sort of look down on programs like that. You know, oh, it's a system QB. He's not going to amount.
You'll take that system in a New York Met now.
but Mark, do we? Because you've got Mason Rudolph of late, and you've got Patrick Mahomes, who are two highly drafted quarterbacks out of those two particular schools.
Yeah. Yeah, it's changed a little bit. Right. And those guys always do get a cup of coffee, at least. They all get drafted. Oh, they don't necessarily stick.
Yeah, well, what's his name? Texas Tech quarterback of a couple of years ago is still on the Giants roster. Davis Webb or Webb Davis, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. two last names. Yeah. Gary Sharp's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Sharpie, a thought here as we wrap up here. And you look at this kind of off season as we get into it, and you got recruiting and Friday Night Lights coming up. And what have you been able to glean the last 7 to 10 days from Nebraska with their recruiting, with their approach, with their evaluation here? How you feeling about where Nebraska's at in recruiting, not just quarterbacks, but some of those positions of need? Maybe you get a commitment today at defensive tackle from a JUCO kid. Your thoughts on the staff and what they're doing right now?
Well, I think they do. First of all, they put out a lot of offers. I mean, they've got offers all over the place. And, you know, they're still playing catch-up for the class of 2019, but they're laying some good groundwork for 20 and 21. I think this is a staff that enjoys evaluating prospects, and they're not just going to dump offers because Tennessee dropped an offer on somebody. They're gonna look at film and make their own judgment before they offer somebody. But I also think this is a staff that will not chase a piece of paper that has a bunch of rankings on it that says, hey, this kid's a four-star, you got to go get him. I think this staff will say, we're going to have a system in place, we're confident enough in our development and our coaching that people will come to us instead of us just chasing stars out there. And we're going to take our time to make the right evaluation on players and get the right person. We're not going to be a Johnny Come Lately that just drops you an offer and says, hey, we're Nebraska. They're going to do their time so that that recruit that's being recruited by Nebraska has a genuine feel that they have a connection to the program. And I think that's where some guys on the staff have a real strength as recruiters, is their relationship building, and especially the head coach who wants to get to know you as a person before he gets to know you as a number that's running around on a football field that could eventually play for him. You know, Nebraska's in that one, in that stage right now, and I think it'll last for a couple of years, is that new coach smell where people are like, oh, that's Scott Frost. I mean, he's on the cover of Athlon wearing a Letterman's jacket. I can't remember a preseason football magazine that had the head coach on the cover of a magazine. Usually it's players. So they got about 2.5 years, that new coach smell where they can recruit to Scott Frost.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, then you turn it over, and it's Scott Frost is the coach at Nebraska, and now you're recruiting to Nebraska. So I think the staff does a really good job. They're patient. They do make a lot of offers, but they're going to get the right people to come here and play. And I think you're seeing, especially with some of the areas on the roster that are lacking depth, they're going to get guys that can play right away, like they did in the 2018 class. You'll see that in the 2019 class, that guys that they're recruiting in particular spots got to come in and play right away. And that's kind of what they think with 2018, about 8 to 10 guys they think have got to get on the field and play right away.
That's good stuff. Sharpie, you have a great holiday weekend, bud. Thanks for a few minutes today. Appreciate you.
Hey, Mark, Chris, and Colton, thank you very much. We'll talk to you next week.
See you, bud. Take care.
Thanks,
he is.
Gary
Sharp with us. Yeah, you know, he just knocked it out, man. 8 to 10 contributors. You got guys on Twitter last night. They're flying in today to get to work this upcoming week for summer sessions. That's awesome.
Yeah, it. You know what? I wonder what they're going to do at corner. You almost have to move some receivers over or something, don't you?
Well,
some safeties. I mean. Even if it's a 1 year deal,
you've got a two deep. But beyond that, I got nothing for you. Here's the thing. Some of the incoming kids, all right, for this 18 class, they may be safeties now, but I think they went after kids that can play both spots.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll just move some of the new kids, I would think, if they want to get on the field, and give them a shot at corner. That's just how I look at it.
You have to get creative though at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just feels you get one injury there.
No, I know.
And you're screwed.
Absolutely. Well, you got one injury, but you also, let's be real, you've not had a ton of success at that spot. Other kids have played bad, but they haven't gone and made a ton of memorable plays from a positive standpoint either.
Yeah, you don't know what these guys got.
No. Well, you saw a pick six, right, against Wisconsin. That was a highlight of the year for the secondary.
Yeah.
Specifically the corners. You've got good talent there. It's just not been brought out yet. And you're
Wait, wasn't that Aaron Williams a safety though?
Well, you might. Yeah, it was. Sorry. Okay, I told you. The safeties are going to be playing quarter.
I know. Quarters are like allergic to getting their hands on the ball. At least they were last year.
They were 87 yards off the ball.
But right. That's what I'm saying. Can we even judge them? Like, is it even fair to judge them? Because, man, I remember sitting up there, sitting up high, watching, and just being like, oh, okay, yeah, Diaco's clearly he's just trying not to show something.
He's baiting them.
Yeah. And then the game ended. You're like, oh, my God, they never came up, did they?
I just remember Paul Christ in his most disappointed father look, looking at Hornibrook after that pick six and the place goes bat bleep. We're just going to run the ball.
Yeah,
son, you're grounded. Turn and hand off. Yep. And then, you know, bludgeoning later, it's 21-point win by Wisconsin.
I would almost put that up on the, like, 0-1 Colorado, where
you just got owned.
Well, it literally changed the program.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, that fourth quarter of Wisconsin was the beginning of the end of Riley. That, right? Like, that was really it. That was where, I mean, of course, the loss at home to, God, what is it, Northern Illinois, whoever the hell that was.
Yeah, yeah.
Try to blank it out of my mind. But it was really then, you know, where you're just like, okay, this, and it was completely downhill from there.
It's all good.
It was a program changer.
It was.
Changed the program.
Necessary evil.
Wisconsin ran a coach out.
Sure they did. They've ran
they
two.
Started it.
They've ran two out.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, well, good enough. Kranek, good luck with your grill / smoker hunting.
Thank you.
The green egg is recommended by Brandon Vogel and Gary Barnett. Mm-hmm. I think those are good calls. That's a good call. And once you do get it purchased, me and the bunny and Junior will be over and we'll eat on you. You can get some sort of brisket or
like
rib thing
on
going.
Me.
You're providing the food.
Because I'm going to say, you know.
No, I'm not having a spare rack of ribs off your back. That's disgusting. We've ruined the barbecue moment for the weekend for many.
I'll put the ketchup in my belly button. You can dip.
That is so. I'm going to go throw up now.
All right.
Hey, be good. Take care of yourself, all right?
Godspeed, sir.
All right. We'll be back at you on Tuesday. Thanks to Colton Stone, Chris Schmidt, Gary Sharp, Brandon Vogel, Mike Leach. Talk to you on Tuesday.